I'm sorry, it should be State versus Webb. And the reason I said State versus Cook is because I didn't have the sign-in sheet. Thank you, Mr. Playoff. Mr. Barber, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and I apologize for not getting the sign-in sheet signed timely. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, may it please the court, my name is Joshua Barber. I represent Johann Webb. This is an appeal from the District Court of Lancaster County's decision to affirm the county court's denial of Mr. Webb's motion for absolute discharge. The motion for absolute discharge was made based on both statutory speedy trial grounds and constitutional speedy trial grounds. And we are asking the court to reverse for both reasons and remand this with directions to order a discharge.
You're familiar with our recent jurisprudence about constitutional claims on interlocutory appeals.
I am vaguely familiar with it, Your Honor, and I can limit my arguments in this case. Well, I'll leave it at that. Okay. And I'd like to proceed first with a brief recitation of the procedural history of this case. Mr. Webb was charged with false imprisonment, child abuse, and disturbing the peace on June 3rd of 2019 in the county court. A different attorney was appointed to represent him initially. I was not appointed to represent him until a little over a year after that. Based on that filing date, the last day for the state to bring Mr. Webb to trial before considering any excludable time would have been December 3rd of 2019. And we argue that were it not for unreasonable delays related to competency proceedings in this case, Mr. Webb would have been brought to trial within that time period.
The state contends that the pretrial motions filed on August 5th really are that stopped the clock at that point.
And our argument, Justice Funk, with respect to that point is that those pretrial motions, because they didn't result in any delay in the proceedings, shouldn't have stopped the clock and shouldn't be excludable under the statutory scheme.
Does the statute say that? Do you have some authority for that?
I think a plain reading of the statute, and I set this out in my brief, is the first part of 29-1207-4A refers to delays resulting from other proceedings, including but not limited to, and I want to make sure that I read this, get this correct. The period of delay resulting from other proceedings concerning the defendant, including but not limited to an examination and hearing on competency and the period during which he or she is incompetent to stand trial. That's the first phrase of 1207-4A. In that first phrase, the word including is followed by but not limited to, suggesting that the list that follows is non-exclusive. In the second phrase, it says the time from filing until final disposition of pretrial motions of the defendant, including, and there's no comma, but not limited to, after the word including in that second phrase. And we would suggest that the legislature, had it chosen to make the list that followed that word including non-exhaustive, again, the legislature would have stated, but not limited to, but the legislature did not.
So after the semicolon and to stand trial semicolon, then it goes on to create a separate section that is, but not limited to. Is that correct?
Well, the second, after the first semicolon, it says the time from filing until final disposition of pretrial motions of the defendant, comma, including motions to suppress evidence, motions to quash the indictment or information, demurs and pleas and abatement, and motions for change of venue.
So that's an exhaustive list.
That's our contention. Yes.
And if we disagree, what's the outcome?
Well, I think if we disagree, the outcome is not favorable for Mr. Webb.
If we were disagree, all that time then from August 5th, 2019 would be excluded. Is that the result?
I will concede that the motions that were filed on August 5th of 2019, which included a motion, two motions for disclosure, a motion in limine, a motion to remove restraints, and I think there was a motion for civilian clothing.
Request for Jackson v. Denno.
Yeah, I think that's correct, too. Those motions have still not been disposed of.
And in fact, they were refiled in 2020. Is that correct?
And
July of 2020?
That is correct. They were refiled after the end of the time period that we contend should not have been excluded. And so essentially what we argue is the statutory speedy trial time had already run by the time those motions were filed a second time. And they were filed a second time by me in preparation, anticipation of trial. And we didn't get to that point.
Before your time expires, do you want to speak about the competency to stand trial issue on any delay or excludable period of time for that?
I do. I think it was an unreasonable period of time. Mr. Webb was his first counsel filed a motion for competency evaluation on August 9th. That motion was disposed of on August 12th of 2019. There was an evaluation done. That evaluation was considered by the court on September 5th of 2019. Judge Acton found Mr. Webb competent but restorable and ordered him committed to the Lincoln Regional Center. He wasn't actually taken to the Lincoln Regional Center until December.
Found him incompetent.
I'm sorry, found him incompetent but restorable.
Restorable.
Thank you, Justice Funk. So after that, he was held at the Lancaster County Jail for 3 months before he was taken to the Regional Center for efforts at restoration. Then the doctor that initially evaluated him determined after 4 days that he needed to be involuntarily medicated. A motion was filed shortly after the review hearing, I believe it was December 17th. Which caused further delay, and the motion was for involuntary medication. Then Judge Acton denied the motion for involuntary medication because no efforts had been made to tell Mr. Webb that he could take oral medication. Eventually, February 5th, Mindy Abel, who was another, I believe, a psychologist that evaluated him, and I'm out of time, if I could.
You may finish
my response. Her opinion was that he was competent as of February 5th, and she wrote a letter to that effect. That got to the court, wasn't brought before the court. There was no hearing until March of 2020, and then there were a series of motions to continue, most of which were made by Webb's counsel, who was contending that, without really stating the evidence, that Mr. Webb was still incompetent, and Mr. Webb vociferously opposed that. So we would suggest that that delay was totally unreasonable, especially in light of the opposition Mr. Webb faced from his own counsel. And if there are no further questions, I appreciate the court's time.
Thank you very much. Ms. Faust, good morning to you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Stacy Faust. I'm Assistant Attorney General representing Appalachia, the state of Nebraska. Both the county court and the district court found that Webb's August 5th pretrial motions operated to stop the clock under subsection 4A of the speedy trial statute because they had never been ruled on. State's position is that the lower courts were correct. And this case is really as simple as only 63 days had run on the clock by the time Webb filed his motions. Webb disagrees for three reasons in his brief. He first argues that the motions did not cause any delay in bringing him to trial. This court has time and again rejected that argument. It's just a period of time, not a period of delay. Webb also argues that none of the motions were properly filed since they did not include notices of hearing, but there is no such requirement under the speedy trial statute, and the Court of Appeals has rejected a similar argument, and that case is in my brief. Webb's primary argument is that none of his motions are one of those enumerated under subsection 4A. He argues the list of pretrial motions of 4A is exhaustive because the legislature used the word including and not including, but not limited to. But this court has held that including introduces examples, and it means the same thing as including, but not limited to. And for years, this court and the Court of Appeals have excluded under 4A for pretrial motions not specifically listed in that subsection.
In any of the cases where we've said that about including, have we ever been talking about a statute that uses including in one phrase and including but not limited to in another phrase in the same subsection of the same statute, other than the cases where we've rejected
right, they
this just type of argument with respect to this statute?
So the case I cited in my brief was not speedy trial case, but the case said in the legal context, which this would be, they mean the same thing, including is the same thing as including, but not limited to. It makes it not exhaustive. It just introduces examples.
I don't disagree with the premise, but that premise, it seems to me, becomes a little bit more shaky when the legislature uses the same.
Oh, sure.
Uses including and then including, but not limited to, in the same subsection of the same statute. In other words, there's a difference. What significance does the difference have?
I don't think any. I mean, like I said, for years, this court and the Court of Appeals have excluded non-listed motions. So really we have legislative acquiescence at this point. And I think it would lead to an absurd result if the legislature is not going to be able to list every single pretrial motion that a defendant could file. And so
I beg your pardon. I think the question is more to was the legislature deliberate when in proximity to one another it used both the expression including but not limited to, and those are two different expressions. Did they mean two different things in their choice of words, or forgive me, is it just sloppy?
I'm going to guess they meant the same thing, for the reason as they just said that they're not going to be able to list every single motion that a defendant could file. So it meant when it said at the beginning of the statute, including but not limited to, it was introducing examples. The same thing goes when it just used the word including, because I would just assume that I think it's logical that they would know that they can't list every single defense pretrial motion.
Is the but.
And that would be true with respect to each of these introductory phrases. One cannot list all examples.
Yes.
So I'm not sure that informs the legislature's choice of words if the legislature had done this deliberately.
Sure.
The but not limited to phrase under your argument is superfluous, right?
Yes.
Usually we don't read statutes to render words or phrases superfluous, but your argument is this is one rare example where that's the case.
But what if it means one in the same? So maybe it's not really superfluous, because if it means one in the same, including equals, including but not limited to, isn't the same? I mean, it's the same way, it's the
Well, that, I'm, you're saying the statute would mean the same thing, whether the statute says just including, or whether it says including but not limited to.
Sure.
And so the but not limited to under that reading isn't, it isn't serving any purpose. If it's there, the statute means one thing, and if it's not there, the statute means the same thing.
Yes.
Suppose you have a statute that in the same section says A equals B, and A equals but is not less than nor more than B. Wouldn't those be
the same thing?
The same thing, but the legislature has just used different words to reach the same concept.
Yes. Yes, that is my position.
We try to give them credit where we can.
Yes, I don't want to call them sloppy. Yes, I think they meant to say the same thing for both. It's because they can't list every hypothetical proceeding concerning the defendant, every pretrial motion concerning the defendant. They're not going to be able to come up with that.
And again, we've said in the past, other motions not specifically named or enumerated caused this period of time,
yes,
period of delay.
So if you disagree with what I've said about the words they use, we definitely have legislative acquiescence because this has been going on 4 years.
And there's been no change.
No change. Right.
Maybe we need to be a little more direct. If we think there should be a change, we could say that.
Sure. I think that takes care of this case. Those motions have been pending this entire time. He filed his motion prematurely. If this court has questions regarding the competency.
Did the court follow the procedures for the competency determination?
Yes.
There's some suggestion the court didn't do so because of the timing of the follow-up hearings or things of that nature.
The follow-up hearings were timely. He was found incompetent on September 5th. The court set the competency review hearing for December 16th. It was pushed to December 31st because of to allow for the state to file the motion for involuntary medication. Then it was held December 31st.
Then it was reset for a period in June. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the order came out, I think on January 28th, setting it for June 1st. And that's
been within the time frame again.
Well, because the order telling the Lincoln Regional Center you need to educate him on his illness and on the medications for those illnesses came out January 2nd, and so I think in any event, it was moved up to March 17th because of Dr. Abel's letter, and then continued on to motions of defense, and because of the pandemic, to ultimately May 8th.
Wasn't there some request to have a in-person or evidentiary hearing to have the psychologist and the psychiatrist testify? Was that made by the defendant himself?
By defense counsel? Yes. There, on March 17th, defense counsel asked for a contested hearing because he had lingering concerns about his client's competency. So that's what was ultimately held on May 8th. Because it was continued twice on defense counsel's continuance requests, and then also because of the pandemic.
Mr. Webb seemed to articulate that was ineffective assistance at that point because it was contrary to what the professionals have said, contrary to what Mr. Webb was saying. Is that ineffective?
No, I don't think there's any merit to the ineffective, but I don't know necessarily why that would be addressed in this interlocutory appeal. Where we're just discussing a order on discharge, where we're just looking at the statute, and it's very clear we're going from the time of the hearing until he's found competent. The merits of that decision, I don't think are ripe at this point. We'll deal with that after direct appeal, under appeal, or possibly on post-conviction. But I think you can look at the record and find he had on cross, he brought out his concerns and about the defendants. He believed his ingrained behavior was so ingrained that it actually boiled down to diminished capacity, and he was never going to be able to help him or any other attorney in his defense, which is a factor.
Mr. Webb had to wait several months for a bed to open up.
I believe so. I think that's the reason.
Is there a point at which that delay in providing a bed to restore competency under our statutory scheme results in an unreasonable delay? And if so, what is that point?
Right now, under this court's precedent, judicial delay is the.
Is that a judicial delay?
No.
The waiting for a bed?
No, no, it's not.
What pigeonhole do we put it in?
You'd have to create a whole new pigeonhole under good cause.
Is that a constitutional issue? Constitutional speedy trial, right? Is that where that gets considered?
Reason for delay? Yes. Yes, it could there. And then, I mean, this court.
Then what's the shelf life of it? Is 3 months acceptable? Is it like how long you wait for a dog to arrive, for a dog sniff? How do we put the limit on this? What's the limiting principle?
I don't know if you can, but if you did, it'd have to be very case specific. And I think it boiled down to what the evidence at the Lincoln Regional Center was, as required bed space and other considerations that I'm honestly not aware of, but I'm sure there are some that would all have to be part of the record and part of the good cause record that the state would have to produce at a discharge hearing.
So we look at good faith, reasonableness.
Yes.
Prudent efforts.
Yes.
Something of that nature.
Yes.
Does the state simply have to have more bed space at the Lincoln Regional Center or some other location?
I think that's going to be up to the legislature and how that gets done. I don't think that's going to boil down to the court's fault. And like I said, right now, that's the only way you get from 4A on these type of motions into 4F is for judicial neglect. It's not because there's any other reason, such as lack of bed space for the prisoner to be transferred to. There are no further questions. The constitutional, there's no jurisdiction for this court to review under State versus Abernathy. But otherwise, we ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
Yes, we're 1 minute, 4 seconds.
1 minute, 4 seconds, Mr. Barber.
Thank you, Your Honor.
With respect to I guess I would just reiterate the argument back on with respect to the motions that were filed August 5th of 2019, the what I think would fairly be characterized as pretrial motions. I want to reemphasize that our argument is that the first phrase of that statute, that subsection 1207-4A, addresses delays. And I think the period, the word delay and the word period of time, those have been addressed by the court as being synonymous in prior case law. There wasn't any delay. There was no period of time that extended the trial in this case as a result of those pretrial motions. And that phrase is the only phrase where the legislature has used the additional language of, but not limited to, and we suggest that the legislature, until they change the statute, said what they meant. Defense counsel rely on the words of the statute to determine when to file motions, to determine what motions to file, and what the impacts of those motions are.
Counsel, I hate to interrupt, but would you care to respond to your opponent's argument regarding legislative acquiescence in our decisions, which are contrary to your contention?
I guess the response that I would make, Your Honor, is that perhaps this particular argument hasn't been made with respect to these two apparently different phrases. And so perhaps the legislature hasn't had the opportunity to look at the issue yet.
I beg your pardon. Mr. Chief Justice, may I ask a question?
You may.
So I think that the state is relying on the outcome that the even if there's a difference in language, you come to the same point. I wonder if you can address this. I digress only to say I recently worked with a grandchild and said 3 + 1 = 4 and 2 + 2 = 4. So I'm wondering if it matters that the language is different.
I think it does. Justice Miller-Lehrman, I think it does matter that the language is different. I recognize that it would be unwieldy to try to list every imaginable pretrial motion in the statute. And I'm not suggesting that that's the only way to include all of those motions for purposes of excludability. But I think at the very least, there could be language that suggests that it is a non-exclusive list. And to the extent that that language isn't there, then I think the only time those non-listed pretrial motions, non-specifically listed pretrial motions, should be excludable is if they actually result in a delay. And in this case, there, which would bring them under the first subsection as other proceedings. And if there's no delay that results from those motions, it just seems unfair to exclude any time that results from anything that gets filed before the trial on behalf of the defendant that could be construed as a motion.
So there should be some difference between a request to wear civilian clothes at the jury trial versus a motion to suppress.
I think that's the point here, yes, is that none of these motions would have resulted in any delay at trial. They are typically made, at least in my experience, and taken up the day before, the day of, maybe the week before a jury trial. They are not motions that are argued at length with evidence and then taken under advisement for periods of time or followed with briefs. And I think those, for those reasons, those motions should not be excluded for purposes of calculation of statutory speedy trial time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That concludes arguments in State versus Webb. Counsel, you are excused. We'll go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Cook.